You are listening to Welsh Tech, episode 608, recorded on August 13th, 2019, for the generations to come. Welsh Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Craper. On the show today, we are joined by Congregational Services Coordinator John Hine, who talks a little bit about his recent essay slash presentation at the Synod Convention, which happened a couple of weeks ago, talking about the generations to come and how we might minister to them. Very interesting and intriguing conversation. Looking forward to his work and their work in that area and some events that they've got coming up. We'll also be sharing the presentation video as our video of the week. We have some picks of the week. Sally has an app that helps you learn JavaScript. I talk a little bit about security, two-step verification. We also have some great feedback, including a blog post about the new EHV, the Evangelical Heritage Version Bible. All that and more. Stay tuned. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Wells Tech, a show about technology and ministry and where those two meet. I'm Martin Spriggs, and we're on episode 608, recorded on August 14th, 2019. Joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally. How are you this afternoon?
I am very good, but today is August 13th, and I bet I mistyped that in the notes you're looking at.
Well, they're probably listening to it at least on August 14th, greater than August 14th. So.
I know it's not August 14th because that's my mom's birthday. She's going to be 89 tomorrow.
You didn't miss it.
Right? Shout out to Mom if you're listening to this on your birthday.
Congratulations. One to go for another milestone,
yeah.
Too. Awesome. We've been spending some summer time here talking congregational services, kind of a summer-long series where we're focusing on a particular area of ministry. For those of you that don't kind of know the inner workings of the Synod and all the what we call areas of ministry, or AOMs for short, there are a number of groups working within the CMM or the Synod. One of them is congregational services. Some of you may remember the old parish services. So it's kind of a reinvention, you know, of parish services. They're a group that tries to meet the needs of our congregations and our schools as well. And so we've been talking about some things that they've been doing. Other areas of ministry include world missions, home missions, ministerial education. So maybe we'll have to devote some time to them as well. But it's been really interesting talking to congregational services because they have such a wide variety of ministries that they do.
Definitely, and I can see the need for someone to coordinate that effort.
What a segue.
They have been in existence for a long time under, like you said, different names and things,
yeah.
But with the wide variety, probably tying it all together is a challenge. And just a couple of years ago, the Synod decided that a coordinator role was a wise investment of manpower and called Pastor John Hine to that role. And we are fortunate to be able to talk to him today.
Yep. He's not only the Congregational Services Coordinator, but the Director of the Commission on Congregational Counseling. So we'll talk a little bit about that too. So let's talk to John and then we'll come back and chit-chat a little bit more.
Joining us for Wells Tech today is Pastor John Hine. Pastor Hine serves as the Director of Congregational Services and most recently the Synod Convention Essayist. Is that the right way to say that? Anyway, Pastor, we'll let
you
introduce yourself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's an essay, if it wasn't read. It was
right.
It's
presenter, a technicality,
yeah.
John.
Presenter.
Yeah, it was
there
fun.
You go. Yeah, go ahead and tell us a little bit about your role as Director of Congregational Services.
Yeah, Congregational Services. I mean, technically the title is coordinator. There are six commissions. I'm the director of one of them, the Commission on Congregational Counseling, which is kind of the coordinating commission of congregational services. My commission is the one that has counselors going to work with churches, kind of boots on the ground type help. And as we've done that over the years, we start to identify common needs in congregations, and that then informs the other commissions as to what their work needs to be.
Okay, great. And you've been on the job for how long here now?
Coming up on 2 years this September.
Flying by. Yeah. Right. Well, we're going to zero in a little bit on some tech questions.
Sure.
I think those are the ones our audience most want to hear. And there were a number of opportunities to kind of poke and prod a little bit based on your essay at Cine Convention last week. So we thought we'd start there. So based on your essay, it seems like you've done quite a bit of research on trends and shifts in kind of different dimensions. One that might be of interest to our listeners is something you mentioned at in your essay. You spoke about how technical advances have led to shifts in how we consume content, illocal and asynchronous consumption. Can you give us a little summary of what you found in that respect?
Sure. I mean, that's a pervasive shift. It's not just in religion, but take, for example, secondary education. It's not that people have to go to a university at a certain time to get classes. They can be taking a class at 2 a.m. In their underwear.
Right.
It's just
and that's the illocal part, right?
Illocal and asynchronous. And that's the way the examples that I gave in my presentation. Just the way, especially younger generations, that's the way they want to consume content. So it's why malls are dying. Shopping malls are dying because they would rather be able to get their stuff online. It's why it's only about 10% of television is watched in real time, basically sports and news. Everybody else either DVRs it or streams it and binge watches it. So think of then the way we approach church, where if we present church as primarily being a place to receive spiritual content, but you need to be there where we tell you to be at a time we tell you to be, that's antithetical to the way younger generations are trying to or prefer to receive their content. This is a Barna study said that 55% of Christian millennials, and of course, it's a growing number of millennials, about 40% aren't Christian. Of the 60% that are, over half get their spiritual content on the internet. So it's becoming more and more common. The irony is that 65% of all Americans say they would much prefer to listen to a live preacher than watch something on video. It's just that, you know, cumulatively, when you talk about the quote unquote inconvenience of getting dressed, getting up, being at a certain place on a Sunday morning, they're just like, okay, yeah, I might prefer to watch a live speaker. Mm-hmm. But it's just easier. So, YouTube and video is becoming more and more common for ways that people watch the sermons.
So is there a tension then with kind of our inbred and kind of created nature of wanting connectedness, being with other people, and then some of this, you know, some of the things that you're talking about, which kind of promote, you know, a separateness, right?
Mm-hmm. I think you hit the nail on the head, Martin, that the way we have to talk about the assembly of the saints, going to church, is not primarily as a way to consume religious content. And it's just a good discipleship program to say that's something you do 24/7.
Right.
You're constantly looking for ways to consume, to be fed by the
less
word.
Less corporate and more communal.
Exactly. And what we stress that the big reason to get together on a Sunday morning or whenever that is to experience that an authentic Christian community. Mm-hmm. So the whole, I mean, you just think of the shifts that's going to take in our church body. It's a real common aspect of Wells culture that people show up 2 minutes before church starts and like the second the pastor says the benediction, they're reaching for their car keys. That just has to change.
Right.
Even when you talk to young millennials who go to our churches, and we assembled a task force that talk about techie, we produced an online training system for how to understand millennials. And this task force found that Wells millennials, what they appreciate most about church is the community. It's not that they don't appreciate hearing a good sermon, but they can hear that again anywhere at any time online.
Right.
But when they get to church and they have that, you know, Christian friends who will encourage them, who will comfort them, who will frankly hold them accountable for how they're living their sanctified life, that's really what young people are appreciating.
All right. So if we could cycle back to your essay slash presentation at Synod Convention, and certainly this was a piece of it, what would you hope that people would walk away from that presentation, you know, and go back to their home congregations with?
Just that we are really entering an unprecedented time in American Christianity. I think a simple illustration would be, since the founding of America, you could argue that there was cultural, sociological advantages to calling yourself a Christian. People would assume that you're trustworthy, that you're hardworking because you call yourself a Christian. For the first time in American history, in large portions of the country, you can make the argument that it is sociologically, culturally, professionally a disadvantage to call yourself a Christian. Talk to any Christian who works in secondary education, and they'll tell you how careful they have to be in how they talk. It's a disadvantage in many cases. You're viewed as narrow-minded, anti-science, anti-intellectual, bigoted, misogynist. So it's a massive shift. So there was this always in American history, this cultural pressure. You should go to church. You should be a Christian. That cultural pressure is gone. So think of then how that changes the way we approach trying to encourage people to come to church. The way that we've always done it, because it worked and also because it required little face-to-face interaction, is to kind of corporately almost advertise our church. Well, we just put up a beautiful new building. CEF helped us paid for that. We're running all sorts of Facebook ads. Come and visit our visit our church. It was all kind of corporate type of stuff. That can maybe get traction if your population feels a pressure to join the church. And to say, we've got a better one. Come and hear our preacher. He's the best preacher in the city. Again, if there's a pressure to listen to preaching, I should listen to a preacher once a week, that maybe will gain traction. That pressure is gone. Mm-hmm. It's completely gone. People don't feel a pressure to go to church. So how then, what's going to convince them to give it a try? It's going to boil down to congregations are going to live or die by their members being willing to take up the responsibility, which ultimately Christ has given us all, to build relationships with unbelievers, getting just to know everybody on your street, not only what's their name, but ultimately what do they, how do they view things like sin and grace, heaven or hell, life and death, and then looking for those opportunities to share our faith, to invite people to church. That's our path moving forward. It's not that corporate stuff, having an excellent worship service, good preaching, even advertising, having a nice sign will be completely unimportant. But those must be done in service of the personal witnessing that we all need to become comfortable with.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Not a lot new to that, right? I mean, we can look at hundreds of New Testament examples where, that one-to-one ministry is what it took, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's ultimately, that was part of my emphasis is, what we're calling for is a return to the early Christian church. I referenced the book by James Hunter that just stressed that's what it's going to take, that the early church exploded. Yes, because they had the gospel, and only the gospel can create faith. But the early Christian church did such a good job of winning an audience for the gospel because of their hospitality, because of their compassion, because of their generosity. Mm-hmm. We need to recapture that.
Right. So let's jump back on the technology line of questioning again.
Sure.
We've had a number of conversations over the summer with a lot of folks from congregational services, and it was really apparent in talking to every one of them that technology is playing a bigger and bigger role in their work, in their ministries. Tell us a little bit about how that has come into congregational services with things like congregationalservices.net, C19, other tools where technology is your friend, where it's helping you.
Yeah, you can almost In our philosophy of ministry, we've almost flipped things around. That the approach used to be, when it comes to training members, that all has to be done face to face in person. When it comes to like outreach, that doesn't have to be face to face. We'll do Facebook ads. We'll do mass mailings. Again, nothing wrong with that, but that was our primary and in some cases our only real efforts when it came to outreach. What we're trying to do is flip that. That when it comes to training, just realizing a lot of that can be done, making better use of technology. So, for example, the Welcome Home Elder Training Program, that there's videos and discussion guides. It's just meant to, that either a pastor can sit down with a group of guys and they can work through this to be trained how to do elder work better. A pastor could even encourage guys to do it on their own at home, and then they get together and kind of debrief and discuss what they learned, so that training aspect, rather than relying on entirely like on the pastor or other lay leaders, which it's a stewardship of time issue. That's a lot of time to do all that training. Let's make better use of technology. And then on the flip side, when it comes to outreach and evangelism, let's still use technology, but stress much, much more the personal interactions with technology, advertising, just being in support of that personal interaction.
Right. Basically, a congregation's avenue or channel to your resources is purely digital at this point.
Yeah.
Right.
WellsCongregationalServices.net. All of the files and resources that we share there, it's all digital files. We're going away from, for example, people ordering up print materials. Right. Just put it online. We can make it free that way. They support congregational services through their congregational mission offerings. Mm-hmm. And so now we're trying to support them by providing resources they maybe couldn't produce on their own, by taking some work off the plate of pastors and lay leaders so that they have more time for that personal, whether it's that personal ministry, whether it's visiting a delinquent or visiting a prospect. WellsCongregationalServices.net. That's how we share everything.
Great.
Excellent. Well, you mentioned a few of the initiatives, Welcome Home, C19, those kind of things. There's also a big conference coming up. It was exciting to hear a little bit about that, and maybe you can share some with our listeners.
Yeah, it's Congregational Services is under the Conference of Presidents. We're not like our own area of ministry, like World Missions, Home Missions, Ministerial Ed. We work for the Conference of Presidents. We're partners with them. And so working with them to kind of identify some of the big cultural issues, the kind of stuff that I referenced in my keynote at the Synod Convention, we're going to dig into those more deeply at the Wells National Conference on Lutheran Leadership. That's January in Chicago. There's five plenary sessions that deal with kind of big, like I said, big cultural 30,000-foot issues that would affect every single Wells congregation. For example, one of them is Pastor John Schrader talking about what does it mean to have a Lutheran voice. Now, you think about how the Lutheran Church was ultimately founded. It was founded by people who wanted religion, wanted to draw close to God, but didn't know how. Mm-hmm. That's completely different than American culture now, where people think there's religious pluralism. People don't care about drawing close to God. What does it mean then to have a distinctive Lutheran voice? Or are we just going to get lost in this big glob of Reformed evangelical churches? I hope not. I hope that we retain a distinct Lutheran voice. So John Schrader will talk about that. That's just one example. Another one by Pastor Joel Heckendorf and Mr. John Tappy on the partnership. How do we build a stronger partnership between lay leadership and clergy? What's the responsibility of each? How do you determine the gifts of each and organize your congregation in a way that makes use of those gifts? So again, five plenary sessions that deal with those kind of macro issues that will affect every single Wells Church. Then there's 25 breakouts that are more tactical in nature. So for example, how do you approach rural ministry? How do you manage a church of 2,000 people, which is a dramatically different challenge than managing a church of 200? 100. Harvest strategies in preschools, how to make better use of technology and social media. We have two presentations on that. So 25 tactical issues. So I think anyone who attends this conference, they're going to come away thinking differently about certain ideas, certain ministry concepts. That's important. But also with some really practical resources that they can immediately implement when they get back to their congregation.
Excellent. And you're recommending kind of a group attend, not just the pastor?
Yeah, I think with any sort of conference, especially a conference of this nature where you're dealing with broad ministry issues, it helps to kind of create kind of a nuclear mass, which I think requires more than one person. So we would encourage if a church could send four people. Maybe it's a pastor, a member of the church council, what I would call a woman of influence, and then maybe a young future leader, maybe a 22, 23-year-old young man who the pastor sees as potential of being a future church president. He'd benefit greatly from this. That way, when that group goes back, it's not just one person saying, I heard this. It's this critical mass of multiple people saying, we heard this and we think this is what it means for our congregation. I think that would gain more traction back in the local church.
Very good. John, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having
and
me.
And thanks for your essay or presentation, whatever we're calling it these days. Keynote, right. I've had already a number of people asking for the video who weren't there and had heard about it. So hopefully I'll get some wings and spread out across the Senate. I think it's good stuff. So
thanks
for sharing that with us and your work in congregational services.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks to Pastor Hind for taking some time out of his busy schedule. He's had a busy summer. Not only, as he mentioned, they're preparing for a conference in January, which is only a few short months away. Sounds like a great event. But he had a big assignment to stand up in front of all the delegates at Synod Convention and deliver a much-talked-about presentation.
Yeah, and just so impressive, all the hats that he wears. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to keep me busy typing for a while today as I type up these show notes, because we have a lot of links related to the things he mentioned from the WellsCongregationalServices.net website, the Welcome Home Elder Training that's coming mm-hmm. out or has been released. And I don't think he even mentioned the 10 for 10 stewardship program that's got a huge great set of content available for people to make use of as well. And then, of course, the conference coming up in January sounds very exciting.
Right. Certainly blessed to have him in that role, and I have a feeling he's going to remain busy. There's a lot of mm-hmm. stuff that, a lot of opportunities for ministry that they're trying to tackle, and I think we're blessed with all the members that we've been talking to, all the guys, and we're going to be talking with yet another one next time we meet, so.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. Sally, ladies first.
And I probably changed my pick of the week at least three or four times. You know, it's been a month since we've done a pick of the week.
Right.
Because we had a special Senate
convention last
Senate
time.
Convention
right.
There.
We didn't have a pick there.
And there's been so much happening in that time. Mm-hmm. And one of the main things that happens, especially over the summer months, are a lot of education-oriented efforts are rolled out so teachers can get training on them. So there's always a lot of neat new announcements over summer and new things to explore. I read an announcement recently. I actually read an article in TechCrunch about Google debuting something new. They're calling it Code with Google. And I think they've had kind of a presence in the past, but it's refreshed and they have different things to make use of. The one that really caught my eye was something called Grasshopper. So I think we've all kind of experienced the browser-based learning to code type sites like Scratch or even Khan Academy has coding and code.org and all of those that are browser-based. But Grasshopper is actually mobile-centric. So it's a free app that you can install on iOS and Android, and it teaches you JavaScript. And it's actually pretty fun. I've been doing it for a while since I read about it. And you can kind of work your way up through the levels and earn patches and earn gear and all kinds of things to decorate your grasshopper. But basically, along the lines, you're learning things about loops and arrays and all these kind of things. And you're actually writing it or filling in the blanks using actual JavaScript code language. So a little bit different than the blocky type atmosphere with Scratch, where you're actually seeing the JavaScript and running the JavaScript. And if you have errors, troubleshooting the JavaScript right there on your mobile device. I think it's really wise for people to be moving toward mobile. And I know there's other apps that have been out, but I've not seen one this good, actually. They have practice built in and trophies that you can earn and all kinds of things.
Cool.
And it's kind of a cartoony interface. It's actually a lot of fun. So
what kind of age range are we talking? How young can somebody jump in this?
I would, certainly reading capabilities.
Right.
So maybe like middle school. High school level could certainly make use of it. And so, and if teachers are listening, maybe they want to grab the app and try it out for themselves during their summertime, whatever. But it might be a good addition to your coding efforts, whatever you have planned for the new school year. So check out Grasshopper. It is done by Google. So they have an area, I think they call it Area 120 or something like that. Area 120, where it's kind of their experimental projects area. And that's what Grasshopper came out of.
Must be something behind that number. I don't know what it is, but to research that.
Look that up.
Grasshopper, that reminds me of, obviously, the Karate Kid and, somebody in training, right?
There you go.
That's probably where they got the name. But so I've just made a note, Sally. Come to Sally with my JavaScript questions.
There you go.
All right, I'm sure you got it.
I'll be able to answer all of them.
Awesome. Now. Great pick. How did you hear about that?
I think I read it in a, like I said, a TechCrunch article.
Oh, okay.
So it probably came across. You know, I rely heavily on a couple of feeds. One is from Smart and another one from, I have it.
These are
right
RSS feeds you're talking about?
It's actually a newsletter type thing. So
okay.
Smart Brief on Educational Technology and then Better Cloud Monitor, which used to be Google Guru, and they kind of got bought by Better Cloud Monitor. And they are always just finding the best that's
awesome.
Available.
This
out
looks
there.
Really neat, really professional.
Yeah.
And a lot of people. You wouldn't really gravitate towards something that wasn't mobile, because it's there and in their hands and whatever.
Right.
You can do it in,
good time filler.
Do it in the doctor's office or grocery store or whatever. So cool. All right, my pick also from Google, and I think I've had this pick before. It's the Google Authenticator app. Google Authenticator app is part of Google's encouragement to have a stronger security approach to their logins, and it really extends beyond Google. You can use this with many other things. So, for instance, your Facebook or Amazon account, you can tie it to your Google Authenticator so that when you log in to those accounts, you are required not just to enter your password, but enter a 6-digit code that's produced by this app that sits on your phone. So it's 2-step or 2-factor authentication. So it's something you know and something you have, in this case, would be your phone app. So if somebody's going to break into your account, they'd need both of those things, which is unlikely. So that's why it's a good approach. I'll put a link in the show notes to the Google 2-step verification page. Really nicely done. They kind of make something that's very geeky, very approachable. So they have 3 tabs on this page. One that says explains why you need it. Another one that says how it works, and then another one that talks about how it protects you in very kind of plain English. I mean, it's not super technical, doesn't go super deep into some of those things that most of us don't understand even. But it does put it in a way that you understand why it's necessary and how to get it going. And then there's a big blue button there that says get started. So you could actually launch this. So it'll take you into your Google account where you have to enable 2-step verification, and then a link to download the app, whether that be on iOS or on Android as well. It's an app that's super easy And the way it works is you scan a barcode. So when you come to set something up, so let's say you go to Amazon and you want to set this up on Amazon's account, you have to go in to dig into the Amazon settings and find two-step verification, and they'll present a barcode right on screen, and then you open up your Google Authenticator app on your phone, you point your phone at your screen or at that barcode, and then it hooks it up. So now you've got Google Authenticator available when you're logging into Amazon. And then what happens is, you know, you log in, it says, hey, what's the six-digit code? And then you can actually say, remember me for 30 days. You don't have to do this every time. So it'll say that, you know, in 30 days you may have to do this again, which is probably good security. But then when you go to the Authenticator app and grab your six digits, it's on a little cycle. I think it's maybe 30 seconds. So every 30 seconds, the numbers change. So that's what gives it, obviously, that little extra security. So it's not the same six digits every time. It's a different six digits every 30 seconds or so. So works really well. I had been using the one, and I think I maybe even made it a pick a while back, from LastPass. The problem with that one is I think you can only put it on one device, and I like to have it on my phone and my tablet. So if I, you know, have one or the other sitting in front of me, I can use either one to enter the validation code or open up the app. The LastPass authenticator only allowed you to have it on one device. So this one's a little bit better, maybe a little bit more universally accepted too. So if you haven't gotten into the two-step verification world, now I think is a good time to do that. It's got all kinds of reasons to do it and very few reasons not to do it. So
I'm a little stumped.
Okay.
It doesn't take much. But don't you still need to use the LastPass authenticator for LastPass?
Nope.
Okay.
So Google Authenticator will work with LastPass as well. So, and LastPass is a good, you don't have to set up two-step verification with LastPass either, but it's a good idea to do it.
Okay.
So that when you sign into your LastPass account, it's going to say, hey, what's your six-digit code? And you can scan the barcode and look it up in Google Authenticator. So, because Google Authenticator existed long before LastPass had their own two-step app. So there's like six or seven others. And it's not just apps either. You can get USB keys, you know, that'll plug in so that it'll automate that process. So that's something you have again. Maybe not quite as convenient, especially if it's on a phone, although I think they do make it for phones as well. And there's all kinds of other things, too. So they're taking it seriously. But this article or this website in the show notes will make kind of brings it down to, I think, anybody's level where they can understand this. So
I'm thinking I need to read that article because I can see authenticating on top of authenticating and getting stuck in a loop or something. I remember my husband having a pager and everything for Y2K, and he had a little fob that the number was rotating.
I've had that in the past too.
So,
yep.
Interesting.
RSA key, right?
Want to be for sure who you are.
All right, let's move on to our community feedback section, and maybe I'll talk about this first one. Ran across this article the other day on Patheos.com. That's Patheos.com. It is an article about a new Bible translation by Lutherans. So I don't know who the blog author is here. I've never met him. Let's see. His name is... Where is his name? Yeah, I'll have to come back to that. But anyway, it's a good article, regardless of who wrote it, talking about our, I would say our, because it was written by Wells and Ells, not written, but translated by Ells and Wells pastors. It's a new translation of the Bible. And Sally, you and I both got a copy at Synod Convention. They were handing out the new Evangelical Heritage Version. That's the EHV. They finally have finished the Old and New Testaments now. So that's available, and through a grant, they're giving out copies to all the delegates. And this article is a glowing review of the project, and some of the talking about the faithfulness to the original text and readability, and he just goes through a lot of the different check boxes that were important to him with a new Lutheran translation. So I think it's a good article to read if you're just kind of interested in maybe considering this new version. Maybe it's being used off and on in your church, your Bible class. You know, a lot of churches are trying to maybe introduce their congregations to this in some way, shape, or form or another. Not that the Synod says this is our translation, but it's, you know, it's kind of neat to have one that was written by Wells pastors and ELS pastors. So take a look at this blog post if you're interested in learning a little bit more about what's behind it and some of the things to expect if you open up that version.
And I'm thinking I could throw a link in the show notes to the actual page where you could order a copy from Northwestern Publishing House.
Yep. So Gene Veith, I found his name, V-E-I-T-H, written in July of this year. So take a look. Sal, you got the next one here?
I do. We heard from Michael Vliger, who is 5th and 6th grade teacher and technology coordinator at Risen Savior Lutheran School in Mankato, Minnesota, and a regular Wells Tech contributor. Mm-hmm. Michael wrote to us to show us his school solution for digital signage. They're using something called Yodek and a Raspberry Pi, and the screen is managed over the internet. He says you can include photos, videos, audio files, and it also has access to widgets for social media, weather, and time. He took some photos. He also made a little video just showing us his screen running. And then there's a good walkthrough video that he shared that is from someone else who's used it, Techno Dad Life. And they do a good job of going over the whole Yodek system and how you manage it and things like that. He says setup was relatively easy and took less than half an hour. So for around $150, which includes the TV bracket for mounting the TV and a Raspberry Pi kit, our school has a decent-looking digital signage option. Yodek is free for one screen, so no fee for the software. So really appreciate you sharing that and us being able to share the photos and things that you took, Michael. And I know that many schools are looking in, and churches actually, are looking into and adding digital signage to their entryway areas, office areas, things like that. So Nice to have a good solution for that.
Yeah, I wonder if I should know this. I wonder if that's what MLC is using, because they use Raspberry Pis for their digital signage. I don't know if they use this particular software or not. So
I don't know either.
Good solution. Thanks for sharing that, Michael. Really appreciate it. And the video, too. Nice.
So I mentioned earlier that I had a hard time doing a pick of the week, and I defaulted to submitting community feedback with the rest of my readings, because there's been so much.
Got to get it out of your system, Sal. You can't keep it bundled up inside.
That's right.
So
just a reminder for folks that we have a DIGO group. So if you come across a great article, you could always add it and tag it with Wells Tech. You can be part of our group if you aren't already, and that's where I stored these links so that I would remember them for today's show. So first up, from me specifically, an article from Make Use Of titled, "What is Password Spraying and How Can It Be Used Against You?" And I had never heard of password spraying, so that title kind of intrigued me. And basically, password spraying is being used by the bad guys, the people that are out on the dark web getting all these account credentials, maybe email addresses, whatever they are, and trying to get into our accounts. And rather than, you know, trying 10,000 times with different password possibilities, what they do with password spraying is they try 10,000 accounts or however many they have access to with really simple passwords. And every once in a while, they get in, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it basically is a reminder to our listeners to not use really simple passwords. If you have password as your password, if you have ABC123, then please go change it right now. You know, you can even pause the podcast. We'll let you do that and go change your passwords. Mm-hmm. So password spraying is a threat as more and more large databases are breached and our credentials are getting out there. So
Right. Pay
attention.
And keep in mind, it's not just your data that could be at risk if you're using some of these simple passwords for church and school accounts, student information systems, you know, your church or school intranet, file servers, whatever. So you're putting other people's information at risk as well. So,
all right, next up, an article that's kind of a interesting set of information from ISTE's chief executive officer. So ISTE is the International Society for Technology and Education, and they have an annual conference in the summer. They're just a really big group in the area of education technology, and their CEO's name is Richard Colata, and Richard sat down with Digital Education and listed five big ed tech problems to solve in 2020. So this is just kind of a future-focused article. I thought, summarized things really well. Teaching AI, focus on the future of work. So learning about artificial intelligence, but not just its functionality now, but looking to the future and what types of jobs students will be dealing with in the future. Shift from coding to computational thinking. So it's not about learning a specific coding language, but it's more important to learn kind of at a higher level computational thinking, how you can use data to answer certain questions, and making sure systems aren't biased, or pair programming they recommend is something to use here, where you're learning from each other and collaborating on code. He talks about redefining digital citizenship. He says that schools need to shift away the way they think about and teach students to be good digital citizens. For the past several years, when we talk about digital citizenship, we're talking about online safety. But instead, digital citizenship should be about how we are using technology to make the world around us better, how we, you know, learn and grow using technology, those kind of things.
We talked about a few of those angles, you know, when we reviewed our last book.
That's right. So it was very forward thinking. Mm-hmm. Rethinking teacher prep for technology and helping teachers, again, to get more. Instead of a certification on a particular software or a particular ecosystem, to get more of a broad understanding of technology. Mm-hmm. And then maybe they'll want to specialize and get, you know, a Seesaw certification or whatever it may be. And ISTE actually has their own certification program. It's not
I didn't know that.
Cheap. Yeah. I looked at what it costs, and I want to say it's about $900 to be part of the program. But they do like some intensive face-to-face training, and then you have assignments and groups that you work together with over a longer period of time. I think it takes about 6 months to complete the whole project and show your artifacts of what you've created.
Might be good for a group of schools to get together and maybe find an individual that could support, you know, a number of schools or maybe some of our high schools, larger schools.
Very good. And then finally, he listed better procurement questions. Does it improve learning? So moving away from just technology.
Let's get smart boards shiny. Because everybody else has them.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they've actually created some support materials to help districts make procurement decisions based on learning principles. So not a long read, but one I think would be a good read, especially for some of the leadership in schools as they're considering the future of technology in their space.
All right. Nice find. I think we'll have to spend a little more time on some of those topics in the future.
And then finally, I just wanted to throw out that I'll include a link in the show notes to an article, again, from Make Use Of, titled How to Sync Google Calendar with Your iPhone. This is kind of a recurring question that I get, Martin. It's not the easiest thing to do, to get the right calendar showing and things like that. And so I thought this article was really thorough. They just recently updated it at the end of July. So if there's screenshots and things included, you know they're going to be up to date with what the iPhone, current iOS. Software has. So if you don't have your Google Calendar on your iPhone, I just read a tweet this morning, I think, that said, who uses the iPhone calendar? You know, why not use your Google Calendar or whatever? It is really versatile and nice to have your calendar right there, but it does take a little bit of setup work. So check out this article.
Awesome. If you'd like to contribute to the show, as Sally did and Michael did, that's really easy to do. You can use Digo, as Sally did, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. We haven't had one of those in a while, so maybe that's a challenge to the crew out there.
How about a challenge to Martin? You should pin something.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll get right on that. Send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, or just go to the show notes page and leave a comment there, wellstech.wells.net. We always love those, or a voicemail. So lots of different ways. We love contributions, so you can remain anonymous if you like, but just let us know your thoughts on a particular topic we talked about or a question, comment, doesn't matter. So love to hear from you. Video of the week. I can guess what this might be.
This ties back to our interview today, Martin. We actually have Pastor John Hine's convention presentation in video format, which is a great way to consume it. He was the first ever, I think, convention essayist who didn't
to not
have an
essay. Right?
Yeah, he had an awesome PowerPoint presentation, and watching it, the video, I think, will be really beneficial and enlightening to many. So tune in.
Yeah, he had many, many slides. We had a side bet going whether he'd make his time slot, and
yeah,
he successfully plowed through it. He had a ton of content, so I think it'd be well worth your while to sit through it. All right, that's going to do it for this week. We hope you come back the next time we gather together on Wells Tech, and we're going to be talking with yet another Congregational Services team member, and that'll be in the military services area. So come back for that and a lot more. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.